Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni, and on today's episode we have Suryendu Mehta and Vineet Rao, the co-founders of DealShare, in conversation with Tarun Davra, Managing Director at Matrix Partners India. DealShare is India's fastest growing social e-commerce startup, known for pioneering the community group buying CGB model in India. The company recently raised a $144 million round led by Tiger Global, along with participation from existing investors. DealShare has experienced exponential growth over the past 1 year and are on path to transform the social commerce landscape in India. We cover highlights from their growth journey, what makes them unique, how the grocery tech space is evolving, and much more. Tune in.
Great. Welcome everyone to Matrix Moments. Have very, very special guests on the show today. Been really looking forward to doing this one for a long time. So thank you, Vineet. Thank you, Mehta. I know it's a busy time for you guys. So really appreciate both of you all taking your time to do this with us.
Thanks, Tarun. And thanks for the opportunity. We are always looking forward to these things.
Thanks, man. This is really exciting. I think always these times which we spend with you guys are very wonderful, and we look forward to these.
Excellent. So firstly, I'm going to congratulate you on the fundraise. It's been a roller coaster of a year for you and I guess for everybody in the ecosystem, but more so for you guys. I remember March 2020, and I think we all were doing a conversation around what does the pandemic mean for us? What does the pandemic mean for e-commerce, for grocery in particular? We went through a tough few months with, you know, strict lockdowns. And on the other side of the year, you are out and you have $150 million more in the bank. So describe the year from your perspective. What went through your minds? I'm sure it was a roller coaster in terms of emotions, in terms of, you know, team building, in terms of operations. So just maybe, you know, a lot of people, wonder what is happening in the ecosystem today, right? With all the capital coming in and what's driving that. As an entrepreneur who's in the thick of things, talk a little bit about just your experience, both the tough times and I guess the positive sentiment around what's happening in grocery tech, and also with your capital raise now.
Absolutely. So I think you coined it really well, right? I think last 15 months were certainly a roller coaster, right? As you remember, right before the pandemic, we were sort of scaling well, and we were expanding, and we were densifying the geographies that we were in, and we were, you know, building a solid team and so on. But as soon as that lockdown came in end of March, right, we did not know what really it means for us. And both me and Mehta, like, took the last flight to Jaipur. And at that time, it was supposed to be only for a week.
I remember that time. I mean, I was amazed when everybody, I mean, I do want to call this out to, you know, all the listeners and, you know, whoever tunes into this podcast. I remember you guys calling me, and this was a time where all of us were hunkering down. All of us were trying to get back to be close to our families. And everybody was avoiding any movement. And you know, really, really feel grateful to you guys. And also it was very humbling to see both of you basically just, you know, took a one-way ticket from Bangalore to Jaipur and said, you know, my family is safe at home, and obviously I would love to be with them, but it's more important for me to be on the ground with my team right now. I just think, these are the things that entrepreneurs do that a lot of people don't read about and you don't hear about. You only hear all the big sort of funding news and all that in the media today, but I do want to call that out, that was something really, really unique that I saw you.
Definitely. And obviously there was some resistance from the family, but we are extremely fortunate that we got tremendous support from our family, right? Especially our wives, in terms of, continually sort of supporting us on this journey. And and as soon as we got there, right? I mean, we took, it was total disruption. And we sat down and said, like, how do we make an opportunity out of it, right? So I think it was fantastic. The first month actually was fantastic for us. First day itself, we were, and we had built very good sort of reputation in the state, right? So first day itself, we were, in the collector's office, in the police commissioner's office, in the chief minister's office. I mean, we're talking to them. And it was really great because, you know, how else otherwise you connect with them, right? And they also really wanted to talk to us and sort of see how we could help out, right? And they gave us tremendous support, right? In all the states, the governments gave us tremendous support. In fact, we got permissions in the state of Rajasthan to issue permissions to others. We were the only ones. Everybody else had to like put a long application to get permissions to you know, go on the road. So I think that really helped us and boosted our morale also, that we are getting actually so much of support from everybody that we did not even expect. And basically we had to work step by step, unlocking all the problems, right? Tremendous amount of problems on the supply side. All the factories were shut down. We had to work with them and the government to get the factories open quickly. You know, all the manpower was just going to their villages. So we had to, you know, literally figure out how to stop them and, you know, get them to continue working with us. And from the customer side, there was tremendous love, right? I mean, for them, nobody else was giving them the service that we were. So we had to really figure out how to, you know, basically meet the promise, right? And we had to also contain the business on the promise that we could deliver. So we had to take a lot of decisions. We, you know, cut down our SKU count from 1,200 to 250, that we'll only operate on those which are most essential, and also focus on the geographies where we can provide the best service. So I think since then, again, ups and downs, lots of ups and downs, right? While the lockdowns opened up and then you know, we started sort of getting back on track, and then again, the second wave coming in.
One was harder, given that you had experienced very severe lockdowns and sort of, you know, learned to kind of navigate through it? What was different about, obviously, wave two was personally very, very tragic for a lot of us and our families. And I know you guys and your entire team was down as well. But from business perspective, how was like second wave of lockdowns different for y'all versus the first? Did you feel more prepared, or you can't really prepare for this?
We thought actually we were fully prepared. So if the wave two was like wave one, we would have just blazed through it, right? But wave two definitely hit us a lot harder, right? Because wave two, the disruption actually went very deep into the team and into you know, us and everywhere, right? And I don't think we were prepared at that level. If it was anything like wave one, we would have like flourished heavily, right? I don't know. That's what I feel. Meta, yeah. What do you think?
I think basically, if you look at the two waves, and for the company, now wave one, if you remember, Tarun, we were basically, before wave one, we were thinking of a fundraise, and we were looking at Series C, and the company was growing on a good trajectory. And then this wave happened, and the entire capital market also dried up. Everybody was very worried as to what will happen. I think the rigor that we had during wave one on both execution and basically navigating through COVID atrocities, and then getting the Series C done while we were very short on our runway, it was basically a huge learning for us. So what we did during this period of March to, let's say, June, July, when we signed off our term sheet for CDC, and then basically also the next 3 months when we went through the whole process. Also, because of COVID, the process was slow. So the whole journey of 6-7 months was so rigorous that our learnings we have now taken forward in a manner that we are able to generally navigate through huge problems. Now, wave two, I think the big problem was the personal health issues that came to us and the whole team. Otherwise, as a business, we were well prepared. Also, I think we knew exactly what to do, whom to meet, and where to take permissions. And those were done. Just that we were not physically available because of COVID, and then our families and somebody or the other would basically go through that. However, if I have to rate, I think the wave one was really hard for the business. So in every business, like,
you just don't know what to expect.
Those problems which come, and then you have to pick yourself up. So our learning was huge, immense on all fronts. And if you look at the outcome also, our business has grown 10x from wave one, pre-wave one till today. because that gave us the confidence to just boost the business. We learned so much that we could boost our business very fast.
I think there are a lot of additional benefits also. What I really see is the team overall coming in a lot stronger. Leadership development has happened very rapidly. And, everybody in the team has sort of signed up for going ahead, going deeper and solving the problems, beyond founders, right? So I think that has also resulted in building a very strong bond. While people are coming in, digging and finding problems and coming with solutions and discussing with us, which probably would have happened much later, I think has resulted, in coming out very, very strongly, is what I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. One thought is that is going through my mind, guys, is there have been multiple starts and stops in the last 12 months, multiple disruptions to business, individual health, lockdowns, delivery boys not being available, logistics and supply chains getting disrupted. And you said you still grew 10x in the year, right? There is a narrative outside that grocery tech has exploded, right? And COVID tailwinds, and these will not be, these may not sustain and things will slow down again. And obviously, very recently you guys announced your latest Series D round led by Tiger Global, which was $100 million round. What is your narrative? Like, how much of this 10x growth in your mind is a COVID tailwind versus, say, something more structural and, something which is going to sustain much more? In your mind, what is the defining reason why this was a very pivotal year for DealShare in terms of growth? And then maybe talk a little bit about the fundraise and, how did that happen?
Yeah, I think COVID definitely had positive impact on the e-grocery business and a lot of adoption, which was waiting for quite some time. COVID just spurred that adoption because people had no choices during lockdown and they had to basically adopt delivery models. Let's say they were just wanting delivery models, not e-commerce, but e-commerce happened to be the choice of delivery, right? So that way they realized that while if they come onto the e-commerce models, they get good high quality products at low prices. Yeah. Then there is this guarantee of all the service. There is no mixing of product quality and all of these. So a lot of people during these times realize that this is a real model that they can adopt and they have been shying away. Now add to it a model like DealShare, which was basically built for the mass consumption or mass consumers of the country. It got an even better basically acceleration because the mass population of India was still not on e-commerce. And then when they had to do that, had to basically adopt e-commerce during lockdown, they realized that, hey, this is the model where we can basically buy better than our kiranas and the service levels and quality of products are really good. So I think post that first adoption that happened due to COVID, it has been a hyperbolic acceleration only. So people adoption is only increasing because, see, this is again a social model that we are building. So one guy is happy, he brings 10 more people and so on. So I think while COVID definitely played a role in changing that adoption journey, the residual impact is much more than what we could have ever thought. We are seeing that every day. I mean, the customer base, just to give you all some figures, the customer base this month would be close to 70-80% higher than last month. So that is the kind of adoption that we are, every month this growth spur is happening on the adoption. So I think this is going to stay, and not just stay, it is going to now exponentially grow because people are realizing the benefits.
I'll give you some examples also over here, right?
Sure.
We were seeing rapid growth, and right from the beginning, we were always capacity blocked. We always have more orders to service than what we can actually service, right? So we have to put blocks at some point in terms of how many pending orders we can really have in the system. This has been true before COVID, and this has been true in the COVID timeframe as well. But what has really changed, and if you remember in April, right, we were really sort of running around in terms of, finding somebody, right, who could give us their spare warehouse space, right? We had talked to all the biggies also, including Flipkart, Amazon, Oda, who had empty warehouses, but unfortunately we could not get access to them. And then we had to really figure out, in terms of how do we structurally build capacity. But what has really changed, Meta made a very good point. I'll give you an example, right? like my mom, right? She's very savvy that way, right? I mean, she's an artist, she's been a dancer, she used to work for railways, she was a teacher also, but she was probably the last one to adopt like a smartphone and WhatsApp, right? It's very hard for her to change from what she was before. But now she's always hooked on to, you know, there are two apps, right? On our phone, one is WhatsApp, one is Daily Hunt. She really loves to read the news. And also sometimes in Kannada, right? So DealShare is probably the third one. And there is like a nearby store app also that she has. And now she's ordering online and she's very intrigued and interested. I never thought she would ever sort of order online, right? But now she's like calling me if she's facing any problem and will talk to me for 15 minutes in terms of how to figure out how to order. Or sometimes she'll get me to order. But I think that is, fundamentally changing the things. Now we have stores nearby and she can call and get the stuff. But she finds it now a lot more convenient. To see all the products, see their prices. If you call the store, they're not going to tell you all the details, right? They'll only take your order as if, ki theek hai, aadha kilo dal bhej do, right? And
correct.
But here she can check, all the options and order. It's a learning curve. It's a very difficult and steep learning curve. I don't think if COVID was not there, she would have ever tried it.
You're saying COVID is the trigger for trial, but once the customer is hooked at experiencing that, and as long as obviously y'all are giving them a good experience when they are coming to your app, you're saying the retention now is much more natural and here to stay.
Yeah, yes. Not just the retention. I think the retention is leading to now virality, where people are bringing more people, and we don't have to really spend a lot on
marketing.
Levels up.
So on that note, Medha, for the people who are listening in who don't know what DealShare is, right? And different people describe DealShare in a slightly different ways. Some people call it the Pindaudao or PDD of India. Some people call it a social commerce company. Somebody calls you a grocery tech company focused on tier one, tier two, or tier two, tier three. Somebody calls you Costco on mobile. There's all sorts of definitions that people use to describe exactly what DealShare is, right? For those who haven't experienced DealShare, for those who don't know what DealShare does, it would be good if y'all can describe the model as you envisioned it when you started, how it has evolved into what it is today, and what is the real core sort of vectors of differentiation. And we've obviously had a lot of discussions internally amongst us between this, but it would be good maybe if you can share a little bit, like what makes DealShare so unique?
So I remember the first discussion we had, right? That was, I think, June, July of 2018. And I'll talk about a lot of things that we have learned in the market and built up, right? In terms of the experience and virality and gamification and everything. But the core that we had discussed at that time was that consumers are paying a very high price as compared to what is the source or manufacturing price, right? I think that is the core of DealShare in terms of how do we bring factory direct or farmer direct products to consumers and at a substantially lower price than what they're paying today. Still benefit from that particular transaction. So how do we really optimize the supply chain, and what is it that we need to really build across the supply chain, across the demand, to really make it happen, right? How do we increase the affordability of the mass market?
Yep. I think the mission is very clear. Like Vineet said, it is increasing affordability of mass market, and factory direct is very important to the consumers. Now, why would people call us an e-grocery or a social commerce and all of that? So let's clarify all of these things. So I think to basically satisfy that mission and to be on that mission, what we also realize that the mass consumption of India is essentially in this grocery and essential space. So that is the first use case we have taken for ourselves. So today, solving for that use case, it is 70-80% of middle income households consumption. Now, we believe that if we don't resolve for that, then we don't have a chance of doing the other parts. So getting into, let's say, one-time purchases or then services or or content or education, all of that would happen. But first, we have to solve for the grocery needs. So, that is why the use case is grocery and essentials today. And the other bit, what we realized when we basically did a lot of research is that these people are not consuming classical mediums like your television ads and all of that. That even if they're consuming, it doesn't impact their usage. So
purchase behavior.
Social. So it was only social which basically could bring these up, because they generally listen to their friends, family members, peers. So it is the influence that basically their group creates in their mind, which results into an adoption. So that is why it is social commerce. So that mission is basically serviced well through a use case of grocery, and then social becomes the moat, because social is necessary for mass population adoption. So that is why people call us in this.
So you're focusing on a customer segment that has traditionally been ignored by larger sort of, or more the earlier sort of wave of e-commerce companies. You're focusing on, you mentioned about local supply and, you know, factory direct and farmer direct. You spoke about social and sort of virality as a customer acquisition channel, and we'll cover more in detail. But I think there's also something very unique on the logistics side, right? What has traditionally been the bane of Indian e-commerce? One is, it's very hard to serve this consumer profitably at the price point at which they typically transact, right? Touch upon that a little bit as to what is it that you'll have solved and what is unique about that. And the second is that, you know, there are multiple, you know, ways in which that customer is today getting served, right? Why is your model more uniquely placed to serve the needs of this customer over the long term? So maybe talk a little bit about both of these. I think that will be really helpful to understand, you know, what is the real disruption that DeShare is causing.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk about the models that have been working really well in the West, and you know, all the sort of modern retail in India has also been focused on that, right? That model is really based on whether you look at Walmart or Amazon, right? It's really based on selection. You know, you give them everything, right? And then different people will have different needs, and if you carry all of the products, then you are serving a much larger population, right? And you give them at a good price and give them a really good service, right? And then they'll become sticky. All of modern retail, whether it is offline stores, right, or whether it is online, has been really focused on that. Unfortunately, the demand for that particular service is very small in India. And that actually makes it very difficult for anybody, right, offline or online retailer, to become profitable until the demand really substantially increases and they get the density. It's very hard because you have to carry a large selection that comes at a very high price in terms of operations. And that's why all the modern retail, especially in the grocery sector, apart from DMart, right, and we can talk about DMart separately in terms of what they've done unique, but everybody else runs their operations cost anywhere between 18% and 40% on the order, right? And that is just not viable. If you have to become a horizontal player, if you have to become a mass market player, you can be a super niche player, right? But you cannot really become a horizontal or mass market player. If you look at Costco or you look at Walmart or Amazon, what they do in US is a fraction of this cost. Now you go to the other end of the spectrum, which is the middle income or lower middle income population, right? It's very interesting. It's a very different TG, right? I mean, they, 90% of what they spend on or consume is like hardly 500 products, right? So that actually brings, and they are not really brand sensitive, right? They are not somebody who would say, even for the most important kinds of consumption like toothpaste, they would not have an affinity. If you give them one brand cheaper than the other, they'll go for it, right? Let alone all the other sort of products, right, where the affinity is almost zero. So this is where you can really optimize, and this is where DealShare has focused from day one to focus on this TG. Keep the assortment really sharp. When you have a very, very small set of assortment and you are catering to a much bigger density, and Meta can give some numbers behind it, then you can run your operations overall, right from procuring to to getting it in warehouses, managing warehouses, to picking and shipping, and to deliveries, a lot more efficient. And that actually, today itself at a smaller scale, we run all of our operations, including warehousing and delivery, at less than 7%. Nobody in the world does that, right? And it is only going to get better with more and more density and more scale.
Yep. I think some very important points which are core differentiators here. One, like Vineet said, it's a very, very sharp assortment. So 1,000 to 1,500 SKUs covering 90% plus of the of Middle India's consumption, resulting into less warehouse space, less warehouse manpower, lower assets. So it's an asset-light model. So both OPEX and CAPEX on the warehousing side is extremely low. And then we create this whole network of community leaders in each area. And so these community leaders are very conversant with their locality, and they are also, they know the people extremely well. Now that reduces the last mile cost dramatically. So if you look at the whole gamut, so we do warehousing in 2-3% and then last mile in at 5% odd. So that's the kind of unit economics we are running on operation side. Now the added part to it is that our AOVs are half of classical e-commerce AOVs. So that percentage at lower AOV is even a bigger distinction. We can still have a lower percentage. Now we always knew that the mass population would not give higher AOV. So that's very important. The last part which Vineet also touched upon is the densification part. Now, if you look at our older city, Jaipur, today we do 12,000 deliveries in the city of Jaipur every day. If you compare it with the next best e-commerce player in the grocery side, and maybe I'll not take names here, but then we are doing 10x deliveries. Now, that densification would basically lead to further cost saving, and community leader would also take this work as one of the primary earnings for them. Now, so that's the big differentiator that we have done across the length and breadth of these five states that we are present now.
So what has that resulted in? And I'll tell you what I'm trying to get to, right? One of the things that I know you guys, I remember the first time you all came and pitched the Matrix team. This was, I think, before you all had raised the first seed round that we closed, right? You all had said the issue with Indian e-commerce is a dollar of investment has resulted in a dollar of GMV, maybe an MV, in the best case, right? And you all had said our aspiration is to take a dollar of capital and create a $10 of NMV on that. Where are you in that journey? What have been some of the learnings in that? And are you happy with where you are? Do you think you can push even harder and sort of get now that the flywheel is turning? What do the next 2-3 years look like for DealShare on that front?
So I think that was basically a goal or a dream that we had set, right? Because I remember discussing with you, and I think you had the most deep insights on this, that the global average is $10 on a dollar and a profitable, right? Profitable, whereas Indian is anywhere between 1.2. So we said we should definitely, beat the global average. And we thought eventually we'll get there, right? When we build a very big business, get to a 5 billion, we should not require more than 500 million. But I'm very happy to announce that we've already crossed that, Menda can share. And eventually when we get to a 5 billion, I think we'll be at a 20 or 30X in terms of capital efficiency.
Yeah. So 10X we crossed a couple of months back. And we are on the journey to cross 20x by the end of this year itself. And by the time we become a 5 billion GMV, I think definitely 30x, if not more. So the capital efficiency factor is extremely important in the way we build our business. Because unfortunately, I think, I would not say unfortunately, I think the first 10 years people have built a lot of infrastructure, they have generated awareness for e-commerce, but nobody looked at capital as a very big asset. Now, what happens is that when investors would put capital, they would obviously one day look at ROC. And that if the ROC is not visible to the investors, that basically the tap stops. So that is what we have solved for from day one. We, in the first year itself, reached a 5X. And now we are at 10X. And I think the journey from here is anybody's guess. The only thing that we'll now want to add is an EBITDA positive business. We are already very close to now touching single digit negative EBITDA. And I think in the next 12 months, anywhere in the next 12 months, we would basically become EBITDA positive as well.
And just to tell you that every incremental dollar that we look at in terms of investment now is easily giving us $20-$30 of growth. And that incremental dollar is totally going into building assets, right? Whether it is expanding our operational capacity or investing into technology. Majority of the incremental investment is going into that. And that is why the returns are really high for us. Operationally or a marketing wise, we don't lose much money.
Yeah. So on the topic of marketing, I think one of the key things that has allowed you all to scale, and if I just look at again the, you know, we alluded to Pinduoduo and how that worked in China. A lot of what drove their growth was demand aggregation using WeChat and using the power of WeChat, right? A lot of the other aspects also have some overlap, right? In terms of local brands and a bunch of other stuff that you guys also focus on. Obviously, you know, there is no equivalent in the truest sense of the word of WeChat in India. Yes, there is WhatsApp, but WhatsApp obviously has a lot of limitations in India in terms of allowing, you know, companies like DealShare to build on top of WhatsApp. How was your customer acquisition strategy different in the early days? I remember being part of some of your groups when we were diligencing DealShare too before we invested. And I was amazed to see the kind of, you know, virality, because every day I was in those groups, you know, dozens of members would join, dozens of members would leave, invite their friends. You know, there was a lot of activity happening, right? So A, what did you do with WhatsApp? And is the strategy still the same today, or how has it evolved, and how is the demand side flywheel working for you?
Absolutely. One of the, at least what, when we did a lot of research before starting up, and we realized that one of the biggest mistakes that majority of the startups do and continue to do, right? Even today, I look at TV ads of very small startups or, you know, brands, and I just wonder, right? I mean, what's going on over there? So we decided right in the beginning that if you have to really build a huge horizontal story, right, you cannot really depend on traditional forms of marketing, which is all this TV ads and paper ads and, you know, Facebook, Google, and all kinds of other activities. It's very, very expensive, and you'll never really recover that that cost, right? You know, that you're spending on whether it is CAC or branding, right? You never make that much amount of money in your LTV. So I think it is intentional decision on our part to keep it as part of our vision and strategy, that we have to figure out how to get to the mass population, you know, for free or for very, very limited cost, and also build a scalable model. The other problem is, unfortunately, your you know, acquisition costs, if you depend on traditional forms of marketing, it keeps on going up. For the first million, if you spend 100 rupees, for the next million, you'll have to spend 200, and just keep going up. And at some point, you'll hit a wall, right? Because after that, you just cannot spend more per incremental user. So we said that is just not going to work out, right? If you have to cater to a million people, you have to have a scalable way of getting everybody at a very low cost. And then rest, I think there are lots of avenues. If you as a founder decide that that is what you're going to do, and you're not going to do the other thing, no matter what, right? No matter whether you have money. A lot of people also tell me, founders, that, hey, we have the money, right? So why won't we bring in, you know, Amitabh Bachchan, right? So, and it's good, right? I mean, I would also like to work with Amitabh Bachchan, right? So, you know, maybe much, much later, right? But I think you have to be very, very careful on this thing, right? And there are lots of avenues now. I mean, everybody is digitally connected. You have to really figure out how to sort of navigate those connections, whether it is WhatsApp or whether it is, you know, just purely word of mouth, in terms of, you know, how people are interacting. Lots of other apps are going to keep coming, you know, to really help you over there. We right in the beginning, we just focused on WhatsApp, right? Everybody was on WhatsApp. So we started building our community over there, and we started giving those people extra benefits, that if you stay in our community and become our influencer, then you will have exclusive access to deals, and you'll be the first ones to know about the staff, and we'll also start making some micro incentives if you drive virality and so on.
Yeah.
And it worked really well for us. I mean, today we have close to 50,000 of these influencers across our communities who are really driving, the virality and the traffic for us. All of the million plus sessions that we get on the app are basically free, right? We don't have to spend a lot of money on external forms of marketing. And that makes us extremely unique. I don't know of any other player, in India, and very few players across the world which are able to really do that.
Yeah, I don't know. You want to add? Yeah, I think if you have to draw a parallel with what we did with WeChat and what we could do with the likes of WhatsApp, and now we are also exploiting Telegram, the channel. I think obviously the transaction closure doesn't happen, but it is a completely free marketing medium for us. So we don't need to spend anything. We get free traffic, free publishing of all our deals and all of that. And the way we have done this from day one, this is something which was core in our strategy from day one. And you would remember that we, like you only said, that you were part of those groups. Now, this has basically allowed us to grow our customer base at almost zero cost. Our CAC, and just to give you an example, our CAC, including all channels, is at $1 compared to, let's say, a $10 in the e-commerce industry. Now, obviously, WhatsApp has its own limitations, unlike WeChat, and we have faced those limitations and those challenges as well. But now we are at a place where we know how to handle that whole beast in a manner that it basically...
And I think WhatsApp also tremendously benefits from this, right? We have talked to all our users in terms of, we are giving you this benefit, right? And we are pushing all these offers and so on. And you are telling all your friends and family, and all of them really like it. Ultimately, for a platform, right, a social platform, it's important that when two people are connecting and they are sharing something, it is useful and it is relevant and meaningful, right? Now, WhatsApp had already become sort of place where there was a lot of sort of junk also coming in, right, which was not very relevant, people sending in all kinds of messages. Over here, I think platforms like WhatsApp really benefit if it is something that all the users are saying that this is good. This is relevant for me. It is, helping me access, good products at low prices, and all the gamified stuff really builds the engagement, right? I mean, it's not just a routine that, we are selling low price products.
Talk a little bit about that, Vineet. I know we've had a lot of discussions on this, and initially there was this thing, whether will group buying work in India the way it worked in China? Will people be incentivized to share these deals with their friends and family? Now I know, again, what you guys have done is very different from what actually played out with PDD and group buying, right? So any insights you can share with the group, a lot of companies try to run these offers on WhatsApp, right? But they don't get the same level of virality that you guys have been able to get, and clearly aren't able to acquire customers at the kind of CAC that you guys are able to do it. So what's the insight there? What has worked for you to the extent you'd like to share? And also talk a little bit about this front-end gamification.
Yes. So again, it is conceptually, it was part of our strategy to focus on engagement and not only on conversion and purchases, right? Typically an e-commerce player would get their monthly active user will, come only 2-3 times. And if they get 5-10% conversion, then that's really good, right, for them. But we really focused on engagement, that this 2-3 times a month is not good enough for us, right? We need to be a lot higher. And right from when we launched our app, we already had users, use our app at least 5-10 times a month. And today they use it more than 40 times a month. So that is the metric that we try to optimize, right? In terms of continually bringing extremely interesting, engaging and gamified, features. Features like flash sales, right? It is very timely sort of discount. Features like we have a concept of Bhakti V deal that the price will keep increasing over time. We have share and unlock kind of deal. We have bargain, you can name your own price like Priceline. There are dozens of these other features. And now we have a very powerful technology team that is sort of building the machine learning part behind this in terms of both personalizing all these assets and also targeting a lot better in terms of, all these offers. So that will, I think, take the engagement to the next level altogether. So I think, but most importantly, I think it is the focus on that engagement piece, right? And group buying and gamification and everything is just, you know, you have to just keep on iterating and keep on improving that metric. And that is what I'm really proud that we have been successfully been able to do. Transaction will be a natural result when your engagement is really high, especially if you are you have relevant articles, right? Our transaction conversion is super high. Our transaction conversion on daily basis is like 20-25% of the user that comes in on the app, along with very high engagement. So that is very difficult to crack generally, that you have very high engagement and still your conversion rate is also very high.
I think it also adds to the mission of the company. Like we said, that one big mission is to increase the affordability. The other one that we carry with us is basically to fill fun into people's lives. Because generally, if you look at Mass India, there is little fun that they have. They're always, there's a boring routine jobs that they're doing. So this fun element is something which they really like, and that adds to the whole mission.
Very important point. In fact, we just had a strategic offsite, and these are the two things in terms of affordability and fun. If you ask anybody in the leadership, that's what they'll call that, you know, deal share is about, and that's what we focus on, and that defines our, you know, culture and values.
Yeah,
excellent. So guys, I know you all have publicly, as part of your recent announcement, very few companies actually go out there and share their sort of, BHAG goal, publicly. And I think you guys have said you want to hit $1 billion in sort of top line by the end of this year. What gives you the confidence that, you know, to put it out there? It would be good to understand a little bit. And I think the bigger question over there is 3 to 5 years from today, right? When DealShare hopefully is a much, much larger company, and you guys are well on your way to making that happen. What would make you truly satisfied? Like, both on the harder aspects in terms of numbers, but also on the softer aspects, because every entrepreneur, you know, at some level, there is a mission that is driving, right? Yes, we talk about numbers. Yes, we talk about metrics. Yes, you talk about, you know, fundings and valuations and all that. But I know both of y'all also started this company. Both of y'all were in very high paying jobs, gave up a lot of, you know, comfort and easy life when y'all started. And I remember the meeting where, you know, we met the first time, and you had actually, this line really struck with me, where you said, failure is not an option for us. And that really struck with me, because, you know, for a lot of the young founders, you know, yeah, they start, it works, it doesn't work, they move on to the next thing. And, you know, you guys obviously came from a, you know, obviously much more experienced, you'll have families, you'll have kids. And I remember this line, Medha, you said, and I think Vineet had also said it, which is, failure is just not an option for us, right? We have to make this work. We have so too much at stake to risk our careers on this. And so would love to understand a little bit about, you know, obviously, you know, hopefully failure is not something that you all worry about every day as much now as you did maybe a year ago or 2 years ago. But what does the next 5 years look like for DealShare, and what will truly make y'all feel that the mission that with which you started DealShare is something that you were able to fulfill?
Cool. So the first question, let's go one by one, right? So just between you and me, right? I think the
this is not between you and me. This is published.
But I think it's actually conservative, right? I think we'll likely do a lot better than hitting $1 billion by end of the year. And the most important thing is that we know, and we have a very solid team now. That is what gives me a lot of confidence, right? When I see the progress that is happening in technology or in sourcing or in operations, you know, everybody's busy. We have 20 warehouses now, and the team is all aligned to build 200 more warehouses this quarter. So we know that the demand is there, right? And majority of these, 80%, will be in the existing cities that we are in. We are still densifying significantly Jaipur. We still only scratch the surface over there. There's a lot more that we can and we would do in all the cities, right? So I think now we have the capital also. I think we could not grow this faster in the beginning, because we wanted to be very conservative on the longevity, right? But you've seen that, like, you know, we've been aggressive enough, right? But not foolish, right, in terms of burning all the money. This is the right time for us to be very aggressive in making the right kinds of investment to really, and I think the consumers are only going to get happier. So we've also set a goal that we'll take our NPS or customer satisfaction very high. And when we build the right kind of operational infrastructure, it automatically results in much higher customer satisfaction. They get much better guarantees on deliveries, but much better quality, much better everything, right? So that is where this quarter's full focus will be. I'm very confident that we'll, you know, in terms of growth, what I already see in July and, you know, what will happen once we have this operation. I've got tremendous support from her, right? So most importantly, what we really decided right in the beginning, forget about deal share, but we want to make a difference. We want to take on a hard problem and solve. And if 5 years later, you know, one thing that, you know, I want to be really proud of is how much of a difference we have really created, right? That's the only thing. That's the only thing that really matters to us, right? Whether we, you know, become 100 or become zero, I think it is most important that we've done something that or built something that we are really proud of.
I think this last part I would touch upon, whether failure is still on our, failure is not an option is still the thought on our mind. Now, essentially, we have scaled really well. We have gone on the path of profitability and all of that. But like Vineet said, we have taken on some personal objectives to create a difference in the ecosystem, in the Indian economy as such. So like some of the early things that we discussed is that we will create a consumer internet giant, which is profitable for the first time in the country. Now, obviously, that is on top of our mind that it is still not profitable and nobody has been able to do it. Can we be the ones who will basically make a profitable consumer internet company in the country and still a giant and not a small one, not a niche one, right? So similarly, the other thing that we keep on discussing is that will the mass consumer think of DealShare as the messiah, because that is what is solving their problem and basically their affordability and their accessibility to different good things of life are there. So we want to improve their living standards. Now, these are things which really bother us, because when we leave some cushionary jobs or a career path in the corporate world, or we give our heart family and us hardships, these are for bigger causes, not for just scale from becoming $1 to $1 billion and $10 billion of GMV. I think that will anyways happen. But our goals are much bigger than just increasing the GMV.
So we also talk to a lot of startup founders, right? And you'll actually find much higher quality startup founders in smaller cities also. You know, in Jaipur, I met with the, you know, founders of, you know, working with the incubators. Unfortunately, they don't have access to capital. But they're really going deep and trying to identify problems, solve. And I just tell them that India is full of problems and they're big problems. You just go talk to people. You go visit villages. You go visit, you know, smaller towns and meet all the mass population. You'll find like dozens of problems that are very, very important that you can, you know, bring technology and solve, right? Unfortunately, what we are continuing to see, what we also had the thesis that the first 10-12 years was everything about I want to build Amazon of India, I want to build Uber of India, you know, everything. And that still continues, right? Massive amounts of money is being poured in now that I want to build whatever is now latest popular in China, right? You know, before it was reseller, now it is the CGB part. I don't really understand the thesis behind either from the founders or the investors' perspective, to be very frank, right? Why does anybody think even now that somebody who's become successful in US or China will really work out in India? So I think we have really stayed away from that. While there are all the elements of Costco or DMart or Pindoutabout, or, you know, you need to really research and learn. But then you have to really... your customers day in and day out, talk to them. Even today, we talk to dozens of our customers on a daily basis. We are admins on our WhatsApp groups. Customers really call us directly. And I like that is the best part of my day, basically talking to them and learning about new challenges and problems. I don't know how many startup founders really do that. And that is what I tell, you know, everybody, that if you are really connected highly with your TG,
with your people on a daily basis and understand the problem and focus on solving, success will automatically come. I don't see why not, right? India is like hungry for, you know, people are hungry, you know, for somebody to come in and solve their problems rather than another global bottle on them.
Yeah. No, I remember when, again, this is going back, I think, what, 2018, when we had visited you all in Jaipur for the first time. I remember every few minutes, Vineet, you used to keep getting a call and I used to keep asking you who, and you were like, I'm the admin on this WhatsApp group, so the customer keeps calling me, right? And that's how I sort of keep a pulse of what customers are asking for. I also remember you guys were fairly active and also actually doing door-to-door deliveries, right? In the early days and going and meeting your customers. And we've been fortunate to accompany you all on some of those delivery runs and actually meet your customers. So it's actually very good to see how you guys have, you know, stayed grounded, you know, stayed in touch with the customer, never lost sight of what they want, and actually solving for their day-to-day need, right? Which is giving them affordable products and creating some fun experience along the way.
Yep.
For them.
Yes. I mean, right now, all of our leadership now is doing that. That was the biggest theme that came out of our leadership sync up also, that, you know, X hours every month, people are going to, you know, spend doing deliveries, talking, meeting with customers, being the call center agent and so on. So, so I think that, and I really appreciate how people are really excited about doing that. And they come back and they are really excited about sharing their experience. And, you know, it's just beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
One last question, I think, then we can maybe we'll move to the next segment of this. So you spoke about Jaipur, Vineet, and, you know, a lot of obviously, Jaipur continues to be a big market for y'all, but, you know, y'all are now in, you know, several other dozen cities as well, right? Just in terms of penetration within Jaipur, right? And if you just take that as an example to kind of highlight the depth of the market and sort of where y'all are today in terms of penetration, how many households would be ordering groceries every month in Jaipur? What percentage of those households would have transacted ever with DealShare? How many of them are transacting regularly with DealShare now? Just so that we got a sense of penetration in some of these smaller cities of these e-commerce services.
Yeah, so I'll give some big numbers and that will explain what our penetration is. So I think the app is already installed with more than 50% of households. So
50%?
More than 50% of Jaipur households will have DealShare app installed. And if I even have to look at a monthly ordering base, so all our estimates show that around 25% of households order once in a month, at least in the city of Jaipur. So Jaipur has like 10 lakh households, and we get around 2.5 lakh unique consumers now from the city of Jaipur. Now, that is the kind of penetration this model can reach. No other e-commerce player till date has spoken about that kind of densification. So,
but this is still getting better month on month, right? I think in a year from now, I expect us to reach, you know, with the more operational work that we are doing and setting up more spokes and warehouses. Yeah. We want to target, like, you know, getting to 50%, right? And people are ordering, you know, 5-6, maybe more times a month from us across this house, you know, this TG, right? We want to be very deep and we want to be the biggest consumer brand for them. I think that is really our goal, that how can we become the biggest consumer brand for the mass market population.
Yeah, just one last thing on this. So the latest research, I think for this round, the research happened in Jaipur, and this was on an external base, not our on our own base, right? And people were asked as to which are the e-commerce models that they know. So DealShare was like here, and then there were the rest, which featured somewhere down the line, maybe 1/5, 1/10, and so on. Some of them, some of the big names that you hear today, they did not even feature on consumers. Voices.
Mine.
So that's how it is.
Outstanding, man. On that note, I think we might be out of time, but I think it's probably the right place to stop, because I think at the end of the day, both as an investor who backed you early and more importantly as founders, that's the one thing that really, really sort of is gratifying, right? Which is, you know, the consumer segment that you decided to focus on, if they are saying that
top of mind recall in terms of e-commerce apps, and DealShare ranks on top of that list for them. That's probably the most important takeaway from this whole thing. So on that note, thank you so much, guys. Really, really grateful. I know there's a lot going on. If you're adding 200 warehouses this month, then or this quarter rather, then I really, really appreciate you guys taking out the time and sharing the story. So thank you so much for doing this. And I know you guys are just getting started. So good luck for the next several years as you continue to build this out into a large, profitable consumer internet company, which I know is your goal.
Thank you so much. And I just want to call out one thing, right? It has been an extreme pleasure to work with you and Avnish and the whole Matrix team, right? I remember right from the beginning in terms of really focusing on, building the business that came from the Matrix team, right? And also Avnish, and not really go after like just round to round and increase valuation and get more funding and somehow show numbers, right? Which I still see many other early stage, funds really go after, right? I don't want to take any names, but I think it has been really, truly exciting, and we are very happy to sort of work on that, right? If it was some other fund just pushing us to show numbers and grow without any focus on unit economics, I don't think we would have made it.
I think you guys just complimented.
I think the early stage partner is plays a very vital role. I feel plays very vital role in terms of whether you will be able to build a business or not.
Yes.
And where the focus really is. So thank you so much for that, and also convey my thanks to Avnish, right?
Absolutely. No, guys, I think you all are being too kind. The reality is, the reason we backed you is because you guys were already thinking about all these things the right way. We from our side share this with everybody. There are a few people who take that advice and stay true to it. So I think full credit to you all. I don't think we deserve too much credit for that. It's honestly you guys, and I know it was always tempting and easy to sort of do some of the short-term things, but you guys have always stayed true to building something long-term. So congratulations again, and thank you so much. Very grateful for the partnership.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.